You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people, welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. I'm thrilled to be zooming in with Sarah Baker Andrus, and she has a drink I've never had. So tell us about yourself, and then we'll mix up what you call the summer shandy cocktail.
Great, I would love to. So I have spent my entire career immersed in everybody else's careers. And I think, like many of us, I sort of fell upon work that I love relatively randomly. I was graduate assistant and got this job working in the Career Center, helping adult students complete their resumes and find new work opportunities. They were pivoting. And this led to just a lifetime fascination with how people choose careers and really how careers sometimes choose us. And I knew that I wanted to help people be intentional with those choices. And after a long corporate career in recruiting and leadership and talent management, I founded Avara Careers, and I just love helping people find work that is a great fit for them.
Awesome. You and I share the same passion. So tell me about the summer shandy cocktail. So I've got, it requires a Pilsner beer, and I got Bitburger, which totally reminds me of being overseas. We've got some club soda, some fiery ginger syrup.
Ooh.
Fresh lime juice, fresh lemon juice, and lime bitters, which I've never had, and I'm so excited to have it.
I have to tell you, I'm jealous because I could not find lime bitters anywhere here in Delaware. So compromised and I got lemon bitters. It looks like the same brand though.
Sure, yeah. Sure. So I'm going to start putting everything in. So it's basically a quarter ounce of everything. So
yeah,
quarter ounce of fresh lime, and I'm putting it in my cup filled with ice.
Perfect.
Quarter ounce of lemon juice, quarter ounce ginger syrup, which I'm obsessed with ginger. So I can't.
I am too.
I've never had this before.
I've never had that particular one. That you have to let me know how that tastes.
Yeah, I will. Quarter ounce of that. Oh, it smells delightful.
Mm.
And then sparkling water, which is my favorite. I'm not a soda drinker, so I drink tons of sparkling water. And then what am I missing? Bitters. Okay.
Couple dashes of that.
Got it. And then we put the beer on top.
Yeah.
And then we stir it up and throw in a lime wedge.
That's it.
Oh my goodness. I can't wait. Okay. Here we go. It looks so awesome.
Doesn't that look great?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the way mine looks. I'm ready to dive in with you.
And it's called a summer shandy cocktail. Cheers.
Cheers to you, Renee.
Let's taste it. Oh my gosh. It's making my mouth water. Must be the ginger and the,
I think it's the combination of the lime juice, the lemon juice, and the beer together. It's not unlike how people will add, you know, a lime to a Corona or an orange to a Blue Moon. And what I love about this drink is it's relatively low alcohol. And here we are, you know, in the afternoon enjoying a light cocktail together.
Oh, this is so refreshing, like total boating summer. Oh my gosh, it's totally making my mouth water. Okay. So, Sarah, you are known as the career rebel, which I love. So what can we celebrate with you this week?
Well, this week, Saturday, my husband and I, once again, for I don't even want to say how many times, become empty nesters.
Oh, wow. Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
I'm excited about it. I'm petrified when my children leave.
Ah, no.
7 years, 8 years to go on my oldest, but it petrifies me right now.
So I'm dating myself, but our oldest actually got unintentionally stuck with us for the pandemic for 18 months.
Oh
He's a professional musician. And so he gave up his lease January 2020 because he was going to be on tour last year. And he says, Mom, Dad, could I just move a few things home? And we said, sure. And then he did a few gigs, you know, January, February. And then got to stay with us. And it was delightful and wonderful. And he moved out a few weeks ago, which was also delightful and wonderful. And in the meantime, his younger brother had moved home temporarily. And he moves out on Saturday.
Oh, my God. Okay, double cheers.
Yes, yes.
Because the boy is leaving again.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me, what kind of professional musician is he? What does, is he a singer? Or does he play an instrument?
So he's what they call a producer. He creates music using the computer and sound and a software package called Ableton. He is a solo artist. His name is 5AM.
Oh, cool. I love music.
Yeah, 5AM music is 5ammusic.com is where you could find him or any of the other socials. But he also has a trio and it's known as electronic music, it's not really EDM, it's more of a jazz fusion. And
I love EDM and jazz, so I'm going to try
it out. Yeah, yeah. And he loves it. And I think he sort of picked up this idea, who knows from whom, that he could do whatever he wanted with his life, you know, as a career coach and somebody who's been involved with that. Both of my children are a little bit, they're a little bit creative. They're really entrepreneurial. They felt no pressure to follow a traditional path.
I love that. What do you think was the key that you were able to help them unlock that?
Well, I think it's this idea I had, perhaps because of my educational background and just being an educator and involved in adult development, that we do much better if we focus on our strengths. And there's no point in teaching ducks to climb trees or squirrels to swim. So I like to think that, you know, my husband and I really facilitated their strengths and their interests and tried to give them opportunities to be really good at what they loved.
I love that. I love that. And I'm sure, you know, it's really rare for people to feel that way. And so what an awesome gift that you gave to your two sons. That's incredible. Okay, yeah. Sarah, we're going on the party bus.
Who All right, let's go. Met?
They've got to be alive and famous.
You want specific names. So here's what I came up with. All right. I thought anybody who could make me laugh. So the first thing I came up with was anybody on the cast of SNL. And I think I know that was on my mind because I'm a big fan of Seth Meyers and I was just watching, you know, his show the other night and then Norm MacDonald sadly just passed. And so I was watching a lot of Norm's old stuff. And I just thought, that's who I want on my party bus is anybody ever the entire period of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that would be incredible. We would have so much fun and be laughing hysterically, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And we could even drive through New York because I love New York.
I do too.
All right. So let's dive in. I'd love for you to share some tips with job seekers. Like, what is the most common mistake that people make when they start a job search, Sarah?
Well, I think we'd all agree, anybody who's in this work would agree that the biggest mistake is we get this instinct, we get this itch to look for something new, and we go on a job board. And then one of two things happens. Either we are very highly self-critical and we read all the job postings and we immediately rule ourselves out because we think, I can't do that. I don't know. That doesn't look so good. Or we love everything and we keep hitting apply. Unfortunately, either of these strategies winds up leaving us discouraged, disappointed, overwhelmed because we don't get anything back. It's a very passive way to look for a job. And it really does set us up for failure because we know that, you know, I think the current statistics are only 15% of new hires ever come through just clicking apply.
Right. So tell me, let's go back to, so I have noticed, and I don't know if you've studied this, but there's a difference between men and women. Or if you're when you read a job description, men and women are different in how much percentage that they're qualified for, will they click apply versus shy away from? Do you follow those statistics?
Yes. The ones that I've seen are 65% for men. So if I'm a guy and I look at qualifications, generally speaking, 65%, I'm thinking I can do that. Mm-hmm. And if I'm a woman, I feel like I have to already be able to do the job. And neither one of these is good. I generally advise my clients to look for about 75%. And some people think, well, isn't that low? But it's not, because you want to have at least 25% of the job that you could learn something from, because otherwise they probably don't want you and you probably don't want them.
You'll just go into the position and you'll be bored out of your mind because you're not being challenged. So I totally agree with you. 75% is a great benchmark, Sarah.
Yeah.
What are the biggest barriers that most people face in their job search, do you feel?
You know, one thing I've noticed is that there is a trigger cycle. So like I said before, we're triggered by something, whether it's seeing somebody else get a promotion and we didn't, or we feel like we could be earning more or doing more, or maybe we just feel like our skills are getting stale. We're not having fun anymore. There's a toxic work environment, whatever. Trigger, excitement, energy, I'm going to find something new. And if we pour that energy into the wrong types of job search activities, like just clicking apply, then we set ourselves up for stalling because we're not getting any feedback because we've taken a passive approach. And then we could say, well, I tried a few things. And that's where the big barrier comes in, because then we're beginning to get a little bit of fear language. I must not be qualified enough. There must be better candidates. It's probably a bad time to look for a job, or whatever your brain is telling you. And then we stall until the next trigger. So it becomes this cycle that can happen two or three times, maybe more. I had a client who was in the middle of this cycle. Had been there several times. He told me over the last several years, he had been, you know, looking like at least three or four times, trying to find something new, and had applied to hundreds of jobs and nothing happened. And I said, well, what are you looking for, Dustin? And he says, I'm really open to anything. And I said, no, you are not. Please, no, you are not open to anything, because as soon as you do that, you are setting yourself up for failure. Because until you get really clear on the actual work you want to do, to talk about it like a hike when you're on a trail and you're trying to climb a peak, and you might see different trails going off, right? But they all get you to the top of the mountain. And they might offer you like a different terrain. The footing might be good in one place and terrible in another. The company might be good over here, but not so great over there. It's all an adventure.
Right. So with that, I would really tell people to like follow their gut on that. How do you get people to trust their own instincts?
What a great question. You know, I think that most of us, when asked some good questions, like when you think about what really gives you energy, when can you tell me about a time when you've had energy? And I think people really relate to that. If you think about your job and you say, well, parts of my day are pretty blah, but when I get to do X, so you don't even have to deal with the gut then, because they're so clear on that question of energy that it becomes obvious.
Yeah. And the question I ask people is, what gets you out of bed in the morning? And I want to know where you go to work. Like, what gets you out of bed in the morning? Not your alarm clock.
Say that all the time. Yeah. Yes.
And it really shows them what they're so excited about. And back to your point of having people focus on their strengths, I'm all about that, because I want everyone to find a job where they feel like it's effortless. And then you feel like you're not working, you know, you won't work another day in your life because you're just having a ball, soaring with your strengths, doing work that you enjoy. I really
That's
love
right.
that philosophy.
That's right, exactly. And yeah. then it's also worthwhile to really think about where do you want to invest your talents. So I like to talk about our portfolio of knowledge, skills, and abilities. And just like a financial portfolio, you want to invest that where it has the greatest room for growth and the smallest opportunity for risk. And you've got real talent there. This is your portfolio. Where are you going to invest that? So then we can talk about, well, what are the characteristics of an employer that really matter to you? What's the type of environment where you're going to thrive? Who do you want to be working with? Everything from people to the purpose of the organization to culture, which we certainly have heard a lot about in this whole pandemic season. And it all matters.
It does. Love that analogy of your portfolio. That's awesome. I've never heard it shared that way. And it's so easy to visualize that.
Thank you.
So say we're sitting in an interview and someone says, tell me about yourself. How do you recommend people answer that question? Because it's so open-ended.
Absolutely. And don't you think it's an amazing gift if you're prepared to answer it?
Absolutely.
It's like the biggest gift ever. And I always tell my clients that I'm like, hope and pray that they ask you that because you're going to be so well prepared.
Right.
And I think that the key is really to understand deeply what this role is all about and understand what the hiring manager is looking for. And people go, well, how could I know that? I'm like, well, you're doing your research. And if you have really identified the employer and you know you want to work there, that means you know people who work there and you know what they like about the company. And you have a sense of the role because hopefully you've talked to people who are doing that kind of work. So you're integrating your intelligence that you've collected on that with who you are. And it's really about developing a vocabulary and a fluency in what you bring to the table. So, you know, I think another big issue with the tell me about yourself question is that nobody wants to brag.
Right.
And I was saying to Lily the other day, who I mentioned to you, she said, well, I know I've got killer organizational skills. And she said, but I would never say that in an interview. And it's like, well, look. If there's one time in life, it's okay to brag a little bit. It's
right.
in an interview. But what if we came up with a way that it felt a little bit more comfortable for you? I said, for example, has a boss or a manager ever commented on your organizational skills? She said, oh yeah, all the time. He's telling me I saved his butt with my organizational skills. And I've gotten a lot of compliments about it. And I said, so how about you say, I've always been complimented by my managers on my organizational skills, and that makes me feel great. And so when I saw this role and I saw that was something important here, it really attracted me, and I'm interested in finding out more.
That is an incredible response. Number one, the individual doesn't feel like they're bragging. And number two, you have proof from a previous manager, which just elevates your candidacy instantly.
It does. It does. And it feels good.
Absolutely. And I've told people, because, you know, I coach people too. And I tell them, I'm like, you don't have an arrogant bone in your body. You're not going to come across arrogant when you're talking about your skills and accomplishments. I'm like, this interview is when you have to do that. You
right.
have to talk about that. That's where you're going to get the job.
That's right. And they're expecting you to.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. But people are so worried, like, oh, I don't want to come across as arrogant. I'm like, you never would. It's not in your demeanor. You know what
no.
I mean?
No, absolutely. And I think by putting these in somebody else's words, or even let's say you're a young person who doesn't have much work experience, you might even say, my friends and family always count on me for doing the party planning. They know I'm good at it. And I'm always the one that gets asked to pull the things together and to get the group together. Whatever it is, there are ways to talk about yourself humbly while still making it really clear you're confident about that skill.
Absolutely. I love it, Sarah. Okay, so if I'm a hiring manager, how do I choose between two equally qualified candidates?
Well, the first thing I have to say is that, and you know, I used to do a lot of this work, a good hiring manager will always keep the whole team in mind, and they will have spoken with the team. Where are the gaps? You know, maybe this is a role that was recently vacated. Somebody went got a promotion or moved on to something else. You know, what do we wish we would have had in that role? Or what wasn't necessary in that role? Where are my gaps as a leader? What am I looking to have something fill in for me? And if you've had that conversation and you've aligned on that direction, then that's really half the battle. And then I really think it's a red flag when you aren't interviewing other members of the team as part of the process for taking a job, even an entry-level job, maybe meeting one other person or talking to one other person for a few minutes. So as a manager, I want to get people's different takes. What did you think? Maybe in your conversation, you saw something that I didn't see. I don't have all the answers, right? So I think that's really important. And if everyone on the team is truly aligned on what's needed, in my experience, the choice usually becomes obvious. And in fact, they are not equally qualified.
Right.
So it's that equally qualified that I think refers to something on paper that may or may not be relevant in real life.
Right, exactly. Because everyone is so different, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So we touched on mindset a little bit at the beginning, but how does fear and mindset play a role in job searching?
You know, I really think it can make or break us. And the way I look at this is that it's funny, Renee, because, you know, in our society, we put such huge, huge weight on what do you do? It's the first thing anybody asks us about ourselves. But we do nothing to teach people how to look for work or how to choose a career. We do nothing, you know? And I think the job search process is fraught with obstacles and places to get stuck. And our fear will take over if we don't have an explanation for something and we're waiting to hear. Well, our mind is going to tell us all kinds of stories. So the first thing is, to be prepared for that, and a coach can be really useful, or a cheerleader, or any kind of self-care that you have, to be prepared for that voice in your head. And I really believe in this saying that not everything we think is true.
Oh, absolutely. Cheers to that.
Sister. Yes, thank you. Yeah. So I like to suggest to my clients when they get scared and they're just anxious and worried if they're doing all the right things and is there the right job out there for them. These are just thoughts in our head, and our brain is trying to keep us safe. It's trying to prepare us for rejection. But that doesn't mean anything we're thinking is actually true. So the first thing we can ask ourselves is that really true? And the second thing we could do is take that thought, whatever it is, and say, is it useful? And if it's not true, and it's not useful, then just acknowledge that. And you're not asking the fear to go away. You're not trying to stuff it, but just, you know, to use a mindfulness term, just have some equanimity with it. Just try to be with it. And that's actually a muscle you can build. So I've had clients tell me, you know, the first time I went through this, it was so hard, but I found that with, you know, as time goes on, I'm just looking at it. I like to think of Ariana Grande's word, you know, thank you. Next.
Oh yeah. I love
the
that
song. Because you learn something from every experience and move on and keep going.
Make it sound so easy.
It's not.
I've studied and done a lot of mindset and growth work, and it takes so much energy, right?
It does.
The way you describe it, it's okay. You don't have to stuff the fear. You don't have to try to avoid it, but just have an awareness of it. So I
yes,
love that.
Exactly. And it's not easy. It's hard.
It is
very hard work, but it's the kind of hard work that pays off.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. I'll tell you a life story. I think, let's see, my husband and I, because I got into this personal growth, huge trajectory, studying it and really digging deep into how I was raised and my subconscious mind and my thoughts, all of that stuff, and trying to reprogram them because there was a lot of untruths that were in my brain.
Yeah.
And when I was on that journey, Sarah, I told my husband, who it's funny, his name is Dustin, your client earlier, not my husband, but same name. And I told him, I said, in my mind, I was like, if he doesn't get on board with me and we don't grow like this together, I could totally see us, you know, not on the same plane. So he totally got involved and we did it together and we've grown immensely together.
How beautiful. And
it's just incredible because it will, when you master your thoughts and changing them, it will change your life.
Yes.
You really truly believe that there's nothing you can't do, which to me is incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think particularly in this area of our lives, we need so much help with us. Feel like, you know, just to acknowledge that when we decide to look for a job, we are volunteering for rejection. We're saying, okay, I'm going to put myself out there again and again and again. And I'm setting myself up for you to say, no, not good enough for me, and move on. But, you know, when a client once said to me, oh, I got rejected. And I said, well, actually, you could look at it that way. But they decided you weren't a fit. And if they decided you weren't a fit, you dodged a bullet there. Yeah. You didn't get rejected. And so it's all about how do you want to interpret it? And some people say to me, oh, well, that's very Pollyanna, or don't you have rose-colored glasses? And I say, yeah, I do, because I want my clients to be successful. And if you allow yourself to go into the deep down dark pits of I'm not qualified and I don't have what it takes, you're going to reflect that in one way or another in an interview. It's going to come across.
Absolutely. And job seekers, actually, it's a two-way street. You're interviewing the companies as much as they're interviewing you, which I feel like so many people forget. You can reject them too. So
absolutely.
Yes.
I love this idea. Do I want to work here? And if you start with that, and you kind of, I have my clients do a benchmarking exercise where we create kind of an ideal job before they've even written a resume or updated their resume. We're looking at what do you want? Like, what's the ideal? And is it pie in the sky? Maybe. However, it gives us a benchmark that was created in an objective frame of mind, right? So I do ask them to be realistic regarding, like, I'm not asking them, oh, if only I could play the piano, I would play the piano at Carnegie Hall. But we're being realistic about the real skills, real abilities, real income, all of that. Well, then if you start to get offers, when you start to get offers, you've got an objective outline of what you were looking for. And it's a really important reminder because on the other side of this process, we haven't talked about it at all, is the seduction of the offer, of the recruiter. And this is happening all over the place right now. Recruiters are desperate for help. The job market is so hot.
Yeah.
I had a client who texted me yesterday and she sent me an image, a screenshot of a message she had gotten from a recruiter because she got, believe it or not, two offers over the weekend. She picked one and she politely and rightly wrote to this guy and said, who she had an interview with the company next Friday. And she said, I just need to withdraw my name because I've accepted another offer.
Yeah.
He was all over that. He was like, well, what offer, what company, what this or that? And it's like, hang on.
Right.
He's setting you up to try to answer your objections and you don't need to have this conversation with him. And I think there's a lot of enthusiasm on the recruiter's part to get these people in the door and to get them signed, and completely unnecessary pressure. We need an answer within 24 hours. This is absurd.
Right.
And by having this ideal job really clear in our minds, we protect ourselves from being influenced, I think, unduly influenced by the pressures that some employers are bringing to bear on candidates right now.
Right, absolutely. And I've been, you know, I mean, I run part of my business is executive search. And I always tell everyone though, there's 90% of recruiters, like third-party recruiters, that are not in it for the right reasons. And 10% That's right. of us are phenomenal. And so time and time again, when we work with people and they're complimenting us on you're the best recruiters we've ever worked with, that's because I get it. I've been on both sides. I've worked at a big corporation. I understand it. And the clients we want to work with don't need a decision right away. They're not going to coerce you. They don't want to know all the details to try to counter on the offer. If you've made a decision that's best for you, that's great. But I can totally relate. And I've even had job seekers come to me with the same thing, like, Renee, mm-hmm. this is what happened. What? And I came to you because I know you would help me navigate. And I'm like, you don't know them anything. Like,
no explanation. Absolutely not.
The way that your client declined was perfect. I need to withdraw my candidacy. That was enough said.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's why I started my business. Part of the reason that was my fuel because I just, the reputation out there, I wanted to enhance it and mm-hmm. make it better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still happens to this day.
Yeah, I used to be a recruit for the longest time. I was a recruiter and I ran a team of recruitment, doing all campus relations. And so I think when you've been on both sides, you really understand that if both people aren't interested, then it's just not going anywhere. It's kind of like dating.
Totally like dating. I relate everything about recruiting and interviewing to dating.
Exactly.
So Sarah, what's the best tip you can give for job seekers out there today?
I would say the best approach right now is to target specific employers and make deep connections with them. And by that, I mean, connecting with people within the organization. You're using your school, your alma mater as a resource is wonderful because alumni will always help out with that. Mm-hmm. Doing research makes all the difference in an interview. Managers really want to know that you want to work there.
Right.
Absolutely. So I think that targeting, laser focus is the best strategy right now. Also because, you know, most jobs are not being posted on paid job boards. They're just not. They're on the company website. So why not create your own job board and have a list of companies that you're going back to once a week, and you'll begin to see when those new jobs pop up. And
Right. You
make connections and people will begin to let you know.
Totally agree. And if you know someone that works at a company you want to work for, if you can be an employee referral, you're going to the top of the list.
That's it. Absolutely. Yep. No doubt about it.
Sarah, where did you get your inspiration from?
Well, I thought about this question. Thank you for asking me in advance. I hope you know how helpful that is, because I this past year I did some reading, and the books I read aren't new ones. One of the books I read was Sue Monk Kidd, and she is most famous for The Secret Life of Bees and other books.
I love that book.
Yeah. But she wrote a book called When the Heart Waits, which was a memoir about a difficult time in her life and how she was beginning to doubt her purpose and how she made it through that very difficult year.
Oh.
So that's When the Heart Waits. And then the other book that I'm really enjoying is called Who Do We Choose to Be? And it's by Margaret Wheatley. And she talks about the different kind of leadership that's called for in these times.
Oh, fascinating.
And they are really inspiring books, and books that I like to pick up again and again.
Cool. I love it. So where can everyone find you, Sarah?
I'm at www.avaracareers.com. And Avara is spelled AVARAH careers.com.
Perfect. And thank you so much for all the tremendous value that you have shared with our listeners. You are incredible.
As are you. Cheers to you, Renee. I just love talking to you and I love your energy. I hope we'll have a chance to do this again.
Yes, exactly. And for all of you listeners, if you're a job seeker or a hiring leader in need of talent, go to payraiseandpromotion.com or talentq.net to learn more. Until next time, cheers.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We are thrilled to have made a worldwide impact with listeners in 9 different countries. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to subscribe to Careers and Cocktails on YouTube and drop us a review on your favorite podcast app. If you're looking to update your resume or you're stuck in your career, I'm designated by LinkedIn as the top resume writer and career coach expert. I even created a resume and e-learning course to help you if you want to do your own resume. It's super simple and extremely affordable. Go to careersandcocktails.com to learn more. I also wrote a book called I Hate Mondays for all of you job seekers who hate your jobs and want to love your Mondays. You can go there for the same information. And of course, I am up to so much valuable information sharing that for you hiring leaders, if you want to find the secrets to finding the best talent, I have a hiring guide at careersandcocktails.com as well. I am here to share information and help people love what they do. Until next time, cheers.